Good morning, everyone. So good to be back here. Last week, Heidi and I we were off and away, and so we got a little vacation, a little getaway, and so it was good to get away. But one of the things that we both talked about is that, man, we really miss our church family this morning. And so at least know this: while last week we were gone, we were still thinking of you. And that does kind of lead us to what we're going to be talking about this morning. As some of you maybe are just joining us, this is actually a great time to just join us. We're starting into a new series on Philippians. And basically what we're going to try to accomplish this morning is I will give some background to Philippians, and then I also want to kind of help us understand the theme that if you want to be reading along, a theme that you can maybe try as you're reading through Philippians. Try to tease out. See if you can see this theme run all the way through the book. Sometimes it's helpful to notice here's an overarching theme that Paul's trying to talk about, and follow that along and see how that impacts your understanding of the book. And so we'll be kind of unpacking a theme that we'll be working with and talking about this morning. But one of the things that I want you to think about this morning when you're thinking about Philippians is friends. And so when I was talking about us missing you this last Sunday, a lot of Philippians is in my heart as I'm thinking through that. How many of you can just kind of think through some friends that when I'm talking about a friend, someone that you've been a friend with that maybe you've done significant ministry with, or maybe you've been involved somehow in your relationship with God, and this person has maybe walked you along in your walk with God. Think about that person this morning. I want you to think about this person and how has that person impacted your life. For me, I'll never forget when I first came to know the Lord, one of the first places that I got a chance to go serve was Maranatha Bible Camp. And so while I'm out there, I was roommates with one of the guys that was there. He was from Canada, Victoria, or British Columbia, Canada. And absolutely loved our late night conversations. Like we would get done serving. We were serving in different areas. He had different responsibilities than I did. I was a cabin leader in the summer. But each time we'd come back and we'd have just amazing moments of just praying for one another and talking through what kind of things that we were struggling with and how can we keep growing in our faith. And he's even been somebody that a while back, I went back to visit my mother-in-law when she was living in Washington. And I looked him up just to say, hey, I'm thinking about you. I'm up in this area. And I remember the summers that we had and the times that we'd pray together. Just so appreciate you. What are you up to? And he's a youth pastor up in British Columbia. Wonder if you too can think of people that have been someone like that in your life, someone that's just encouraged you and built into your life and spent time with you and encouraged you in your walk. In Philippians, one of the things that we're going to find as you read through Philippians, you're going to be reading a book of a man who traveled around and he met a group of people and they so worked their way into the Apostle Paul's heart that he would call them friends, beloved. Not even just friends, but brothers. And so this book is largely a book about friendship. And we'll see some of those themes as they work their way out. But just some background information as we start thinking through Philippians. Maybe some of you are new to the book of Philippians, and we'll kind of give some information about this book. One, Philippians, it's a leading city of Macedonia. And so one of the next slides, it actually shows a map of where you would find Philippi. So if you think of the Mediterranean Sea, you go north of the Mediterranean Sea, north of Africa, and then it's going to still be east of Italy. You're going to find this little town, Philippi, tucked away up in Macedonia or Greece. And this city was a leading city of Macedonia. Now, some distinguishing features of this city, there were gold mines that were nearby, so that kind of made it a nice little thing to have. It was also along the Via Ignatia, so one of the primary routes in getting to and from east to west. And so this was a strategic location, and not only that, but if you look in the picture, let's go back one more time at the picture, it's really close to a port city. That you can see just below it in Neapolis. And so this city is a very strategic place. It was a leading city in the Roman Empire. And some of the people that would settle in this area would be army veterans that would a lot of times settle into this city. So these people, not only was it a primary city in Rome, but a lot of these people that are coming here had deep allegiance to Rome. And how that will impact Paul as he's writing this letter is you're going to see language that's talking about this allegiance to Rome. In a moment, if you start reading through in chapter 1, you'll see Paul even mentioning, listen, while I'm in prison, all sorts of different people from Caesar's household are now knowing Jesus because I'm here as a prisoner. Why would that matter to anybody? Because this city was a strategic city of Rome. These people would go, oh my goodness, God is doing something in Rome. This is amazing. And so he's going to mention things and that's significant to this background. Other things that he's going to talk about is being a citizen. These people would know the value of being a citizen of Rome. In fact, when he was first there in Acts 16, you'd see that he was beaten. And one of the things that he actually mentioned was, they beat me and I'm a Roman citizen. And the people got freaked out and they released him. Said they didn't want to have anything to do. They knew they had messed up and apologized to him. So these people understood the value of being a citizen. And in Philippians, we'll see citizen mention. One of the things that was a benefit of Rome was Pax Romana, or peace in Rome, that you didn't really have to worry about a whole lot of things. You could travel roads very openly. But unlike Pax Romana, one of the things that Paul's going to talk about is the peace of God that surpasses understanding. So as we look at this city and its relationship to Rome, Paul does use some things that he's going to talk about that help us understand even some of the themes that he works out and teases out in Philippians. The other thing that we know about this church is it was the first European church, Acts 16, 11 through 40. If we go to that next slide, kind of follow along with that. And one of the things that we can see, it was the first church in Europe that ever started. Paul, as he's having this vision that he was going to go off to Macedonia, he sees this person and he senses a need to go off to Macedonia. And lo and behold, Philippi is the first city he officially stops. And how many of you remember the first member that he meets? Who was it? Any of you remember? A woman, Lydia. First member of the Philippi church. He meets Lydia, this woman. She's a merchant of purple goods, and he goes into her home, and then other people in her household start to come to know the Lord. And then shortly after that, the other thing that we find out is the first people that we have a slave girl that is announcing that these men are here to give you a message from God. And she kind of annoys Paul for a little while. And he ends up speaking to her, and she stops, and that's actually what lands him in prison. And shortly after that, he talks to a Philippian jailer. He ends up in his home, shares the gospel, and he trusts Christ, and his whole family trusts Christ. Now, when you think about this, some of the amazing thing with this, if you were ever going to plant a church, would you pick a slave woman, a merchant woman, and a jailer to be your first people to start your church? And those are the first three people that Paul utilizes in the burgeoning birth of this new work in Philippi. He's not there very long. It's written about AD 59, Philippians. So this is about 10 years after he first visits. So 10 years have gone by. Now, 10 years is a long time. When you think about 10 years and the changes that happen in 10 years in your own life, people that may come in and out of your life. Think of all the different people that Paul would have encountered in all of his travels, and yet this was the one church that had a deep and lasting connection with him, to the point where they actually partnered with him on numerous occasions to help him out even while he was a prisoner right now. They sent someone named Epaphroditus to bring him a gift. This church had a deep relationship with Paul. Well, think through the occasion. So why is Paul writing this letter? Sometimes it's helpful for us to answer some of these questions. What's the history? When was this written? Where was Paul writing this from? Most likely from Rome. Obviously, he's in prison. We know that. But what was the occasion? What prompted Paul to write this? All of these are important questions for us to answer in thinking through this. So one of the things that we know is specifically Paul is imprisoned. Why did he write this? Well, he's in prison. And they specifically sent a person out to him, Epaphroditus, to find out how he's doing. He was bringing a gift to them. And so one of the things that they're actually writing this letter is to say, listen, here's how things are going right here. I want you to know what God is doing in Rome. God is working. Even in the jail system right now, people are coming to know Jesus. He says that my imprisonment is actually advancing the gospel. And he's writing this and he's wanting to encourage them about what God's doing while he's in prison. So we know that Paul's in prison and he's spent time in a prison. Most likely the situation in this one is he is allowed to have visitors. So don't think of like a damp, dark dungeon. Think of like a room where he can actually have visitors. But there's a guard that would be nearby. And so he's allowed to have people come and go and talk with him. So Paul is in prison again. And most likely this even unsettled some of the people that he knew. And so they're wanting to even know how he's doing. And so he's writing this letter to convey that information about how he's doing. Well, we also know Epaphroditus, and that's the other thing that we mentioned. The church sent this person to give a gift, but something happens to Epaphroditus while he's there. He gets sick. Sick to the point that Paul will write in Philippians that he almost died. And the church is nervous about this guy. And so they're probably wondering how he's doing. And so what do you do as a good friend? If you know someone is worried about someone, you maybe give them a call. That's what Paul's doing. Listen, here's how Epaphroditus is doing. And most likely he's actually going to send this letter with Epaphroditus. He's going to bring it back on behalf of Paul. And then the other thing that we see is just the occasion, there's difficulties that the church is facing. Well, what are some of these difficulties that they're facing? As you read through the book, you're going to note that one of the things that happened initially in Acts 16, that immediately when Paul is with the Philippian jailer, he experiences imprisonment even when he first encounters this church. They see that this message, this gospel message, is costly. And it's costing Paul his freedom. He lands in jail because of this message. So already this church knows that suffering is something that they can encounter from watching what happened to Paul. But from the moment he even left, they still continued to encounter more and more suffering. And so he's wanting to write to this group of people and encourage them. Why do you think he would mention things like, listen, even though I'm here in prison myself, even though I'm encountering suffering, listen, the gospel is advancing. What would that do to the hearer? It would encourage their heart that, wait a minute, I'm encountering suffering, but wait, God's using this for good. And so he's writing this to a group of people to encourage their hearts and let them know, listen, the difficulty that we're facing, God is using this in mighty ways. Keep going. It's worth it. And so the other difficulty that we look at with Paul, we looked at just a couple more. Opponents. We know that Roman opponents. Obviously, there was trouble that Paul encountered when he was in Philippi. He landed himself in jail because people were upset that he was advocating things not lawful to Roman culture. And that's what landed him there. So we know it's from Roman opponents, but there's also a religious component here as well. There's a group called a legalist, and we'll define that, and we'll work through some of these themes in a little bit more detail later, but there were legalists, people who were assimilating religious culture that denied the gospel, saying, listen, I have this secret formula that if you just adhere to this, this will make you more. You can be more if you just do this. And Paul's going, listen, that's contrary to the gospel. And he's going to lay that out, and he's going to try to help these people understand that this is actually going to be something that actually fractures and divides them. So the opponents offer a formula for success, and however it promises unity, unfortunately what it delivers is disunity, discord, division. By adhering to standards, it pushes people to an outsider rather than actually helping us all have one thing that actually unites us and bonds us, which Paul would say is this gospel message. There's enemies of the gospel. So Gentiles who were assimilating aspects of the culture at that time that denied the gospel. So there's Roman, there's religious, and really enemies of the gospel, non-religious, just going, listen, I just want to live however I want. And Paul's going to talk and address all of these different things that are seeking to threaten the health of the church. Well, I work us through some of these themes to kind of make us start to move toward a theme. So what's a theme? When you first think of Philippians, some of you maybe just shout out, what's the first thing of a theme, a word that might describe Philippians? What's the first thing that comes to mind? Joy, exactly. So joy, there's a variety of different themes that we can think through, joy being one of them. Jesus Christ is also another theme that happens all throughout. When, if you read through it and just underline, each time it mentions Jesus, or maybe even a pronoun, he, referring to Jesus. Jesus is mentioned over and over and over. He's the central figure that he keeps pointing these people to. He even mentions the gospel of Jesus Christ, that there's this message about Jesus. So we could even see that Jesus is going to be one of the central figures that we could look at as far as a theme. And you'll see Paul speak about life in Christ, or affection of Christ, or righteousness through Jesus Christ, or being imprisoned for Christ. So this whole thing, he's looking at, listen, my whole life was radically changed by this person. He changed what I'm doing. He changes why I'm here and facing chains. It changed everything about me. And then we maybe even have kind of a popular comment, which would be to live is Christ, to die is gain. Christ consumed Paul. And so it would make sense that Jesus would be a central theme given the life that he found through him. But that's not going to be the central theme that we're following through the book. Joy was mentioned. But I want you to think through something with me with this aspect of joy. Joy has been another major theme brought up by many different commentators. Rejoice is mentioned 7 times throughout this letter. Rejoice in the Lord. Again, I say rejoice. He mentions that twice. Then other times he's saying, listen, my joy and my crown, referring to the people of Philippi. 7 times he mentions rejoice. 5 times he mentions joy in the letter. However, one of the things that we might see as we keep reading through this passage is something that stuck out to me this last time as I've been prepping for this. We'll see that joy may actually serve to support and run alongside the main theme rather than the theme itself. That it's actually trying to push us towards something. Joy is actually going to be helping support something. What might that be that it supports? Well, think through something with me. Rejoice. Many times this is an imperative, not to an individual. So it's not individuals that are told to rejoice, but a group that is told to rejoice. Think about that for a moment. It's a plural, meaning all of you rejoice. Joy is also found in connection with something that protects, one might argue strengthens, the group. If you look in Philippians 3:1, it says this, finally, my brothers, rejoice in the Lord. Listen to what he says next. To write the same things to you is no trouble for me and is safe for you. It protects you. Rejoice. Rejoice in the Lord. It's something that's going to protect all of you. It's actually going to strengthen all of you. Kind of an interesting note that with this aspect of joy, it is definitely a theme that we can see, but is this the main theme that we should focus on, or is this supporting something else? Joy is related to our strength. In Philippians 1:25, we'll look at that one as well, just briefly. Philippians 1:25 says this, convinced of this, I know that I will remain and continue with you all, listen, for your progress and joy in the faith. So he wants them to have joy together. He wants them to collectively have joy. It's also related to the peace of God experienced as a group of people faithfully let go of anxiety and rely on God together. Rejoice in the Lord. Again, I say rejoice. And we're not to be anxious, but to do what? Through prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, make our requests known to God. So he's encouraging people with this notion of joy. Something that in many times it's also rooted in sharing the life of Christ and the advancement in the gospel throughout this book. So I bring that back to this. Paul is going to show us that joy is actually related to and enhanced by our relationship with one another. I'll say that again. He's going to show us that joy is actually related to and enhanced by our relationship with one another. So what is the theme that we'll be looking at with Philippians as we work through it? Paul loved this group of people. Early on in the message, one of the first things that he says to him is, man, I am so thankful for your partnership in the gospel. He says it twice. And then he keeps talking to this group of people, and he sees that there's even division that's happening in the church, and it breaks his heart, and he's wanting them to come together. So our theme that we're going to be looking at throughout this book is together for the gospel. That is that central theme that brings all of this together, that actually even supports that aspect of joy. Well, how do I get joy? What Paul said is, you're my joy. I can't experience this joy apart from you. You're my joy. You're my crown. I get this when I'm in connection with you. And he's encouraging a group of people and saying, thank you so much for your partnership, both in chapter 1 and in chapter 4 in the end. He's thanking them for their partnership and saying, listen, we were able to do some amazing things together as we partnered together for the gospel. He's reminding them that he's in chains for the gospel. Talking to them about being together. They've actually supported him while he's in chains for this gospel. So the unifying theme that we're exploring again is together for the gospel. So let's go to Philippians 1:27. And this is actually where we're getting this notion of together for the gospel. I'm going to read this for us. Philippians 1:27 says this. Only let your manner of life be worthy of the gospel of Christ, so that whether I come and see you or I'm absent, I may hear of you that you're standing firm in one spirit, with one mind, striving together for the faith of the gospel. Together for the sake of the gospel. So when we look at this word up here, you'll notice that I have a word in brackets. It's together. In the New American Standard, that's how they've translated that word side by side that you might see in a ESV. But it's the aspect of together for the gospel. The gospel is mentioned all throughout this book. Why is Paul in chains? The gospel. Why has this group tried to support and help Paul? The gospel. Why did they even have this initial relationship to begin with? Paul came there with the gospel, and it changed a group of people's lives. And they formed this relationship that has now continued 10 years later, and they're still supporting him. They're together. Why? Because of the gospel. It's not a superficial friendship based on interests or based on other things. This is something that is based on and rooted on the gospel. Many times I think what's difficult is I mentioned this aspect of friendship. When we think through friendship, one of the things that I was reading was, Aristotle that mentions there's two different types of friendship that many times people choose. One that's of utility. So what can a person do for me? And one of pleasure. Man, I really like this person because of how they make me feel. And he made a unique observation in his ethics. He said this, of all the different types of friendships, utility and pleasure are the weakest of all. That what's going to happen with these friendships based on utility, I need something from you, or I want to be with you because I like you at this time, my opinion may change, or my need for you may change. But one of the things that we start seeing in Philippians is we hear him talk about this concept of fellowship. We hear him talking about this shared life with one another. We hear him talk about this concept of friendship that isn't just based on utility. It isn't just based on pleasure. It's not just based on the fact that, wow, you wear the same kind of shoes as me. Oh, wow, we even like the same sports team. This is great. Oh, wow, we like the same hobbies. This is fun too. It's not based on that. Paul's writing to a group of people and saying, you want a lasting relationship. You want a life-giving relationship with someone. Be together for the gospel. That is where we see true joy. That's where rejoicing happens. That's where life happens. And he's going to encourage and tease out this reality all throughout this letter. Walter Hansen, a commentator, makes a comment about Philippians. And he says, a major purpose of this letter is to transform the experience of koinonia, or fellowship, in light of the life of Christ. And that's what we're going to be doing as we work in our way into the fall, is talking about this aspect of together for the gospel. How do we come together for the gospel? The reality is there's so many things that would love to tear that apart. And even as we look at an outline of the letter, we'll kind of see real quickly here some of the different things that Paul builds up on this theme. And some of you might want to take a phone and just take a picture of this. Sometimes it just kind of helps as you're reading through. See if you can notice some of these. In Philippians 1, 1 through 2, he gives an introduction. Then he's going to go into this thanksgiving for their partnership, that they are coming together for the gospel. In 1:12 through 2:20, together for the gospel. We saw that in 1:27, that he's building up this idea of what does it mean to be together for the gospel. He's going to talk about humility. He's going to give illustrations of that with Jesus. He's going to give illustrations of Timothy and Epaphroditus on people who actually live well together. And they model this type of living. And then he's going to deal with threats to striving together or being together for the gospel. And that's in Philippians 3:1 through 4:9. And in that, you're going to see him dealing with legalists. You're going to see him dealing with these moral people that were basically throwing morals to the wind, going, why do I need to even do this? Who cares? And then he's also going to specifically, in that same portion, deal with a couple, Euodia and Syntyche, and talk to them and say, listen, you were together with me for the gospel. You were striving with me for the gospel. And now they're striving against one another. Why is he upset about that? Because it's going to threaten being together for the gospel. And he's going to address that with these people and talk to them, encourage these two to come back together. And then the last part is joy in life together. He's going to come back to this theme of their partnership and how they've been a part of what he's done, and he's just going to rejoice in it. And then his final words are just going to be what we call greetings and grace. Greetings from other churches that actually they're members of something even bigger than themselves. All the saints are now going to give a greeting to this group of people. And he's going to talk about this shared grace that we have through Jesus Christ. So as we think through, this is kind of where we're going to be heading this fall, together for the gospel. And I'll tell you just briefly on how this has impacted my life and how it's impacted my heart for you all. And hopefully that even helps you understand what I hope it does in the hearts of our church. My challenge to some of you is maybe even just once a week, take a moment and read through Philippians while we're going through this. Once a week. The time that's going to take you is about 15 minutes. If you have a hard time reading, I'd encourage you to hear Philippians how the Philippians heard it. Go on to YouVersion and listen to it in a translation that you enjoy. It's going to take you about 15 minutes. I'll say that again, 15 minutes. It's not that much time. Here's what's happened as I've been taking time for the last couple of weeks of just daily reading through this, thinking through this for the church. And I'll be honest with you, as Paul even, I think, is honest in chapter 1, and he's going, listen, I'm in prison, and do I want to be with Christ? Do I want to be here? And he's giving a heartfelt wrestle with something that he's struggling with and coming, here's my conclusion on this whole thing. And I'll kind of let you into my heart and how this is stirred in me. In the first week, reading through it over and over and over again, if you asked me how much I got from it, not a whole lot. And that's multiple times a day. But all of a sudden, this week, as I'm going through it, there was one night in particular that I'm sitting on my couch. I'm reading through this passage in chapter 1, verse 3, and Paul is sharing his heart and saying, listen, I thank my God for you. Each time I think of you, I just have joy. And this isn't something that I'm trying to manufacture. This is genuinely something that God did in my heart, that as I'm sitting there, you started coming to my mind. Not Cheyenne Berean, but Tim. And Brian, and Brady, families, Johnsons. Specific people are coming to my mind, and as I'm sitting there and I'm thinking through and I'm going, wait, these are people who are partnering together for something bigger than ourselves. They're partnering together for the gospel. They're here. They're coming together. Shoot, we have people right now that are watching kids. Why are they watching kids? Is it just because they have nothing better to do on a Sunday morning? No. They're watching these kids right now, and they're trying to teach these kids about who Jesus is because we want kids to know who Jesus is. And I was thanking God for these people that are working. And I'm thanking God for our ushers that come in, and sometimes they're just handing a bulletin. Sometimes they're just passing a plate. But they're coming together because something is happening here and they want to support it. And there's lives being reached and touched. And there's people that are back running sound that you never see the guy. But slides start moving magically for me. I love it. And I think about these people and I start going, oh God, thank you. I have joy for these people. Thank you for who they are. That it started to change my perspective, that I'm now looking at them with joy. Why is that so important? Because sometimes here's what can happen with my heart when I think about people as a pastor. Sometimes I think about what's going on in some of the lives that you have, and I see the difficulties that you're facing. I know the anxiety that you have going on in your life. I know the struggles that you're going through. And it breaks my heart, and I can grow anxious. But then even thinking about this passage, going, wait, don't be anxious in anything. Wait, Paul was giving me a good illustration of, wait, every time I think of them, have joy and pray for them specifically. This book can radically change how we experience life together. Not just life because we have same interests, but genuinely experiencing the life of Christ as we then come up to one another and pray for one another and go, man, I know you're going through this. Can I pray for you right now? And my heart for us as a church is that we would learn to live together for the gospel. Let's pray. Father, I thank you so much for your word. Thank you for Philippians. Thank you for the themes of joy that run all throughout it. But God, thank you how that even just supports this idea that, man, there's greater joy when I'm living life together. There's also greater pain, God. It's hard as we go through difficulty, and I'm sure the Philippian churches, they knew that Paul was imprisoned again and how that may have impacted their hearts toward him. There's also great sorrow that comes in. Oh God, there's great joy and when we see how you're working in and through the lives of people, and as we pray for one another and we see how you're strengthening them to go through a difficult time. Maybe you're not changing their circumstances, but you're radically changing them through their circumstances so that they can even agree with Paul and say that I've learned to be content in all circumstances. I want that. I want that for this body. God, would you help us to grow this fall as we read through Philippians, as we commit ourselves to reading your word and studying through it? Would you change us to help us live better together for the gospel? In your name, amen.